Kill. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Howdy, I'm Aylin. I'm sick.
Donal, he's Aylin, also known as Dylan. Not feeling too hot, so we figured it'd be best to to go old school pandemic and record remotely. Which, if I hadn't told you, you wouldn't have realized because we've gotten that good at it.
If anything, the pandemic has taught me to not get my friends just normally sick, you know, even regular sick. I'd rather not my friends get have. So, yeah.
Thank you for not making me sick. on the show this week, we've got three brand new albums to review from Andrew WK, Common, and Eagle Eyed Tiger, as well as a look back. Yes, Time Machine has returned. Back at Nas's 1994 debut album, Illmatic. Yeah. That's exciting.
Not to be confused with Lil Nas X, or...
No, not to be confused.
Who released an album just today as well.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, his debut is out.
That's right.
Fucking 3 years of, like,
of old
notoriety.
And, yeah. And,
yeah.
Yeah, that's funny, his namesake. And actually, yeah, we'll talk about it. Nas did release... an album, and like a new album of his own a few weeks ago, but for various reasons I didn't bring it through because I wasn't sure about the production, but I'm very excited to talk about Illmatic and the journey that I've been on with regards to hip-hop the last few months. Dylan, how have you been doing? I mean, you're ill, so probably not too good, right?
Yeah, but you know, I've been enjoying what music's been throwing at us. There's a new Placebo single out, first single in 5 years and first one leading up to an album since 2013.
Oh wow, okay.
So before I started college, was a wee man, wee little spark in my eye, Placebo did their last album. So I'm glad they're back.
What, it wasn't their last album that we covered, it was the one before, right? Battle for the Sun?
No, it was the one that came after Loud Like Love. Was the last one they did. That's been a long while. Almost a decade. It's amazing to believe that. And yet, they come back like nothing's changed. Yeah. Just a real meat and potatoes Placebo song. But it's good. It's really good.
I'm looking forward to hearing it. For sure. It was just down a little bit too far on my release radar for me to get to. But I did hear the new Bring Me the Horizon song. Oh, like, could this be the moment?
You know, I gave it four listens. Mm. And I think I like everything. Don't love. Everything but the vocals.
Mm.
Because I like some of the guitar work. Some of the guitar work is still pretty good, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like they've taken all the praise that I've heaped on them and thrown it in my face. But you know,
we will wait
because it could all sound good within the context of the album. I remember not being too plussed by Mantra when it came out, and then in the context of Ammo, I think Mantra is
fantastic. Like a whole other trying my patience kind of thing.
Very much so.
I mean, I can see it, you know, from a context of people who like I don't know, Justin Bieber and stuff. Like, it grows a lot faster, I'm sure, but.
But Bieber hasn't sounded that derivative for a long time. But we're not here to review the new Bring Me the Horizon song. But yeah, more covers from that Metallica record came out. that re-release that I don't know. The Cherry Glazer one was quite good. Mac DeMarco played their cover, his band's cover of Enter Sandman.
Ghost and Rodrigo and Gabriella were pretty good.
Yeah, I thought the Ghost one was pretty good.
Yeah,
much better. Unique. Fit. And also adapting the song to suit their style. I think that the Mac DeMarco cover is very redundant because it's really just a very straight ahead sort of Metallica style cover of the song. So
same with the friggin' what was it, Your Boys. Weezer.
Oh no, we. Oh, I actually didn't even hear. Is it Enter Sandman also?
It might as well be. It might as well be. It's kind of just there.
I'm not really that excited about this whole Enter Sandman, or sorry, this whole Black Album re-release thing that's been going on for the last few weeks. Let's move on.
Yeah. One more piece of tour news, I guess.
Please do.
Recently, in the last week or so, Black Foxes and Faith No More, or rather Mike Patton himself, they both separately announced that they're canceling their or postponing their tours for mental health reasons.
Yeah, I saw that.
There you go. That's some deep honesty on the front lines.
Yeah, you gotta look after yourself, you know. I think this pandemic has been truly brutal on us all, and I can totally empathize. Yeah,
and tough as well, because about 3 weeks before getting going, you're canceling things that have already kind of been put into motion, so it's even harder.
Yeah,
to do that. So my hearts are with them. And their minds. I wish Mike well, and I wish all of Black Fox as well.
Yeah, Mike and Mark, and I know. Yeah, Mark's had a tough. Well, I think Black Foxes have kind of been through the ringer really the last few years. And I believe they are re-releasing the album Black Foxes with a couple of bonus tracks. I think that might have actually come out today. And it's definitely an opportunity for me to revisit that album, because I know you were really, really keen on it, I think actually in the context of maybe some additional tracks and stuff like that, I might find myself getting to know it and like it a bit more than I did, which I already liked quite a bit. Great. Let me just think about this now. I think I might have had one last piece of news, but it's it's escaping my brain.
Oh, there's a lot.
There is. No. But one piece of news that I absolutely have to call out, because we've been sort of pining for the return of live music for the last 18 months. I actually did.
Oh, I have another bit, but yes. Get anyway, to see, you go on with your list.
You by all means. But I actually got to see a band play a concert in real life, which was just such a breath of fresh air. And I went to see Scattered Ashes, supported by Sun Machine, in the Button Factory. It was a kind of a socially distanced pilot event last week, and it was just really nice to see live music again. Scattered Ashes are play their own sort of brand of that frosty post-punk sort of Joy Division inspired thing, but they the sound was excellent. They played lots of stuff that I hadn't heard before. My good friend Tom plays bass in that band, and he just knocked it out of the park. So it was a great night. Really good night.
It's good to see happen.
Yes.
It's good to see.
Yeah. And hopefully it won't be too long before before that becomes more of a regular occurrence. But I have to say, hearing live music again was really special. You said you know something else?
What was it? You got the EP, you got the LP of theirs recently, the vinyl.
Soda Blonde.
Yeah, they announced recently that there was a lot of delays with the vinyls, of course, shipping.
Oh yeah,
and I've experienced this myself with shipments getting sent straight back to England, and where they came from. So Soda Blonde, I've realized this, took note, and are traveling over there themselves to bring the vinyls back.
No way. Hand.
Yeah, that's fucking fair play to a lot of them.
That I didn't hear that. I hadn't heard that. That's wow.
Well, she posted on a gram recently that just this night. So yeah,
I haven't. Yeah, I haven't actually had a moment to listen yet. But I'm very excited, because that's not no spoilers, but that is one of my albums of the year. That album.
Honestly,
and, I'm excited to hear how it sounds on wax. And actually, my attic was out of bounds for a couple of weeks, so I wasn't able to listen to any of my collections. I've got a few new albums. Like I got a Infinite Granite, the Death Heaven album on vinyl. I have that Soda Blonde album. So some of my favorite albums come out this year. I'm very excited to get down and dirty with them on wax.
Yeah. I want to find that Joy Formidable one somewhere. I'm sure it's
does it exist? Out there.
I bet it does. Yeah. I'd hope so.
I suppose it's not a given.
But you would hope, yeah, that, you know, especially a band of the Joy Formidable size, that they, you know, that they would have, that they, yeah, and they do. I actually just looked it up as we were talking, and they did a lovely white marble version of the record, so you can go out and get that, Dylan, in your own time. But, you know, we are running into late night hours right here, real taco hours here on the show. So let's kick off with the reviews, and I think there's only one place to start this week, and that is...
Is it always up for debate?
No,
not this week. Preference?
It is. It is usually up for debate, but I think this week it's got to be "God Is Partying" by Andrew WK.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, I'm glad. So yeah, so this is the sixth album from Andrew Federley Wilkes Creer.
Yes.
Who famously gets wet.
Yes,
that's what he's known for. Is getting wet. Dylan, you reviewed You're Not Alone, his last record back in 2018.
I did. And I forgot that was just me kind of covering it.
Yeah, it was just you, because I listened back to it this week. Got to be honest with you, didn't do a whole lot for me, but I listened back to it this week.
Has bits.
And yeah. And I sort of listened to it and said, this is ringing absolutely no bells. So, and for that reason alone, I said, okay, I'm gonna have to listen back now, because it feels to me like I didn't actually even review this. And I went to the episode, and yeah, it was actually a solo Dylan review. So you included You Are Not Alone in your top 20 albums of the year for 2018. So that was obviously an album that made quite a big impact for you. And maybe you want to chat about that a little bit of where Andrew WK is coming from now. But certainly for most folks, he is known for I Get Wet, which is sort of the album of party anthems that he released back in 2001. Ago. Yeah, 20 years ago.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, and for somebody who's so high energy, like he's kind of known for just intense positivity and crazy like live energy and just and of course partying. He's the party rock anthem master of metal and sort of I don't know what you would call it, like high energy rock, but
maximalist. Yeah. Positivity.
Yeah, right, maximalist positivity. That's a great way to put it. So you'd think that he would have run out of steam after 20 years.
And he did. I think there was periods of hardship and just taking breaks and doing odd things.
Yeah.
like fucking recording a Gundam tribute album. Yes, the anime Gundam. Yeah, he did that. Wow. So he's more popular in Japan than he is probably here, for instance.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's, you know, I Get Wet obviously makes up the majority of his top 10 on Spotify, but
The Wolf is short behind. The Wolf has some cool stuff as well.
Yeah, The Wolf actually, this is probably the influence of God Is Partying just having come out, but it's currently his top 10. It consists of mostly I Get Wet, three songs from God Is Partying, one song from You Not Alone, and then one song from, I think, it looks like a Jackass soundtrack. We Want Fun.
Yeah.
So like you say, he had a bit of a rough time for a few years. He hasn't been particularly prolific. He hasn't released a ton of albums. This is only his sixth album since 2001. And yet, why do I feel like he is firing on absolutely every possible cylinder here?
Because it's kind of, well, I'm pretty sure the guitarist is the same guitarist from I Get Wet.
I don't mean to cut across you so soon, but the only reason I say no so fast is because Andrew WK played every single note on this album without exception.
Okay, I guess Andy did some of that stuff on the original album as well. So
It was Jimmy Koop and Eric Payne did the guitars. I believe I can't say for sure, but I believe there were some members of Obituary, the band Obituary, who were involved in his first album.
Allow me to double check myself. Something rung true, and
before
he
you double wreck yourself,
yeah.
But Dylan, I definitely get the energy of that first record. From this, I think this is, it's something completely different, but it is super high energy,
whereas the first one was very much full fast tempo hitter belters.
Yeah.
This one is a lot of mid tempo stompers, right?
Yeah.
Belters, kind of a arena ready stuff.
Yep.
Nearest points of reference are close to Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Right. Meatloaf meets Bruce Springsteen.
Springsteen for sure. Yep.
Meets I guess Faith No More. There's a lot of Mike Patton in the opera.
That I didn't get the Faith No More, but then again, you're more okay with that. I mean, I was definitely hearing a lot of you know, what featured on the Rocky IV soundtrack or Rocky III, that kind of that Survivor sound, but also you've got like a lot of Ghost in there, I think. Weirdly, and maybe this is just my particular ear, bringing my particular ear to this, but I heard a lot of Dream Theater on this album as well.
Oh, yeah. Especially in the first few songs, which are kind of the hit singles.
Yes.
Right. Let me just get up here. Like Babylon, Everybody Sins, very Dream Theater.
Very Dream Theater era.
Yeah.
It's that sound. Or, you know, if you want another touch point, maybe Mastodon on Babylon. It's just... It's got that kind of doomy kind of proggy sound to a lot of it. It can get very heavy. I do take what you mean, though. There is definitely a rock opera sort of feel to a lot of it. There's a lot of orchestration. I think at one point there's even a what I would sort of call a Zelda boss introduction interlude called Goddess Partying.
I love that. I love
it's
that.
Great. It sounds, yeah, it's cool.
Very kind of ominous and I like the vibe I'm getting out of what the soundscape he's building here. It's a lot. Yeah, it's interesting. It's not as I'd say it holds a bit with the last album, but it does evolve even farther.
Maybe there's just more variety, but I kind of felt with the last one it all kind of mooshed. Apart from his little positive psychology speeches, which I actually enjoyed, this one just feels like there's something interesting around every turn.
Yeah,
it doesn't stay on one vein for long.
The style of song.
Yeah.
I guess the last album was him back from the dead.
Almost back from the dead. Yeah,
trying to bring some stuff from his I Get Wet stylings and mixing it with what he wants to do. And what he wants to do is now what this album is in its entirety almost.
I love that you can go from something like Stay True to Your Heart, which begins every bit as electronic as any artist that we, you know, you want to talk about.
Yeah.
Hello Meteor or Uppermost, or we're going to talk about Eagle Eye Tiger later on. It's properly well done electronic production, and then it's goes into this cheesy as fuck
Duran Duran.
Yeah, kind of
it's 80s.
Like super super cheesy posy kind of chorus, but the guitars are so big that it sells that chorus, and then it goes right into. There's that interlude, but it goes the next proper song is I'm in Heaven, which is like this. It's almost sort of somewhere between like modern Gojira and Korn. I mean, it's so big
with like some real like scaling screams. Falsetto vocals and
go ahead.
No, it's just kind of a riff song.
It's a riffy song. And one thing that he does there on I'm in Heaven, but he also does it a little bit later on as well. I can't remember exactly which song it is, but he does it a couple times on the album. Is he actually slows down the it's on my tower also. He actually slows the tempo for emphasis, and that happens so rarely. You probably count on one hand the number of times we talked about songs on this show that actually change tempo, and it just makes that bit in I'm in Heaven so much heavier, and it's great, because then, you know, Remember Your Oath right afterwards, and it starts like Billy Joel, and then it sort of continues like Queen.
That's what I was thinking.
The fuck is this album? It's so many different things. I don't know how it works, but it does.
It's a lot of like the 80s stars that kind of hit for the rock opera thing, like My Tower or I Made It sounds a bit like ABBA. So it's going from all these theatrics of rock. But keeping very much Andrew WK. I think his voice is the best it's ever been.
That took me a while to get used to, because I think I only gave this a few kind of cursory listens, and I just sort of thought, why does he try to sound like Bruce Dickinson, you know?
Bruce Dickinson wish he sounded like Andrew WK nowadays.
Everybody burns, no one loves. But he's doing this real vibrato, like it's sort of a stadium rock or like a stadium metal vibrato that he's doing. But actually, the more you listen to it, the more it makes perfect sense for the material that he's actually performing on this record. It's. It's funny.
I love the synth work as well all the way through this. Kind of like some bells and chirps and whirs and whaps. It sounds of course very 80s. But that is also a close reference to what Andrew WK synths always sounded like, but brought into this style, which is cool. Like the Rocky IV bells.
There's a few real air keyboards. Like it's not many songs these days that lots of air guitar, but there's not many times you'd be doing air keyboard, but there's definitely some moments on this album where you're doing an air keyboard.
Because that's definitely him. That's definitely his speciality, I would say, is the piano.
Yeah.
More than most things. I believe he released a piano album, one of them.
Okay.
He's really good.
Lots of strings to his bow. I love the album artwork as well. It's just it's so
in contrast to the to the really beautiful last album, and this one's just him in a gutter.
Yeah, just in the gutter,
his pants
surrounded
dead.
By just like after the most intense night of partying of your life.
And yes, it seems to be the most well realized effort from him.
Yeah,
as far as like a happiness and finding that true kind of core of what he was always trying to go for.
Yeah.
Which you kind of see with
I think we just dropped the connection there, but I agree. there's something about everything about this, the whole package just feels really well put together, and I think the artwork, just to go back to it for a second, because when you actually pull it up, there's so much going on. I mean, there's a gutter that's literally full of blood. He's got a Sprite bottle, a syringe, and a syringe next to it on one side, a vodka bottle, some beer, like there's like a, you know, various different things. He has clearly soiled himself. And there's a teddy bear underneath his leg.
Clearly.
And a used condom down by his shoes. I mean, it is a train wreck of a photograph, but it's so stark and it's so well composed and everything. I think that just drew me right in, and I was like, I want to know more about the world of this album. And it's a really interesting mix. It's not all just super positive. There's actually quite a lot of menace, I think, in the lyrics in a lot of places.
He really took that this time. I appreciate that is now another feather in his bow.
Yeah.
It always seems like he could go there, but he never went there before. And I like that, like, negativity is a positivity that he is channeling now.
It's very good. But then you have the lyrics on "Set You to Your Heart" are super positive. So it's like there is that part to it as well. Good.
I love some of the big solo guitar solos in this as well.
Yeah.
There's some huge things. I think it's "No One to Know" kind of stops.
Yeah.
Almost at the end, and then the guitar just bursts through everything, and it's big. I love the guitar work.
That song is excellent. I think I was like, is that a children's choir at the end? It's got that. Maybe. It's just got that, again, rock opera vibes. But I think that song is just somehow really pulls at your heartstrings. And I agree, the solo sells it. I think another one that the solo really stands out is "My Tower," because it goes on about twice as long as you'd expect, but almost it kind of justifies itself quite well. It doesn't feel like a
lot of these
solo.
Songs do.
Yeah,
like I keep on looking at it going like, oh, 6 minutes, and it keeps surprising me through all these long bouts.
Jesus. No One to Know is 6.5 minutes. Everybody Sins is 6 minutes. I'm looking at the track list. I genuinely, without, I've never looked at the timings for these songs. I would never in a million years have told you those songs were north of 6 minutes. They,
well,
just
Everybody Sins is different fly in, than by. The single version. You know, it has the opening.
Yeah,
the kind of very positive sounding opening that just dive bombs into kind of the negative metalness, and it's good.
Yeah, yeah. I think Everybody Sins is such a highlight though, because it's something about it just to be, as I say, it's probably the most like Survivor or Journey or Foreigner of the whole bunch, but also probably the most Ghost. But then when that guitar chorus, tone comes in, it's almost like Jamie Lennon. It's a really kind of clear, crunchy, you know that guadoo. That thing, I was like there's something very modern about that, and then it's very Iron Maiden in the chorus, and then I think there's like this orchestral swell at the end that reminds me of ABBA, so much going on there.
I would say the chorus sounds a bit more Rainbow.
Pulling out Rainbow, okay,
yeah, right. Yeah,
I'll take it. I can hear that as well. I think there's little bits of, like, I think it's a little bit of ELO I think it's in My Tower towards the end. There's one song that has like a gothy version of ELO on it, which is really funny. It's like Mr. Blue Sky, but done from Transylvania.
Last song is an interesting little bit, because I heard that song came out 8 years ago, technically, on a Party All Goddamn Night EP.
Really?
But this is it being reworked, much like on the last album there was a reworked song from that particular EP. But much better, right? And much more realized. What was that called? Ever Again. That was the reworked track for that.
Interesting.
For You're Not Alone.
Okay.
And it's on YouTube, you can check it out. Yeah. But sounds a lot more radio ready, but this has the metal.
I've literally been singing that in my head. My brain's on a loop of like, and now I won't look back anymore. I'm singing hey, hey, hey. It's so catchy.
It's simple but good.
It's funny actually. I wonder, I'd love to listen to that original. I didn't know there was an original, but if I hear a little bit of punk in the just at the very start before it kicks in. And I wonder, is there more of that in the original? More of that sort of punk feel to it? Because...
No.
No, okay, no. So yeah, because that's just my imagination then.
The riffing's basically the same. Oh, okay, the chorus is the same. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's a good song, though. It's good. The only really song that doesn't quite hit the mark for me is probably... And then
We Blew Apart.
Yeah.
Exactly. Spoke my words. Still has good bits. Still has really good bits
in it.
It
does, yeah. Like, it gets better as it goes along. I just think... At the start, it's maybe like just over egging the pudding, and like this is a very eggy pudding, but
it's very corn dog.
Despite
itself, and it kind of sounds like what the album was already kind of doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, that makes sense, but it just feels like
what
the song is trying to do. The last song before had already done it.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's coming off like the last kind of heavy song, I suppose. It begins quite heavy with Everybody Sins and Babylon and stuff, and then in the middle you've got I'm in Heaven, and that kind of brings it right back down to earth, and then you've got kind of two very high quality cheesy quite songs in Remember Your Oath and My Tower. So then to have And Then We Blew Apart afterwards, it just feels like a bit too much. And I Made It as a different vibe again, so it kind of ends well. But yeah, I wouldn't have put And Then We Blew Apart there. I'm not sure I would lose it, but I could maybe chop a minute off it and possibly put it somewhere else in the album. Yeah.
But I like I like his change up on the lyrics now. Barely a mention of partying. Much more Christian kind of visuals and
dark
stuff like that, which is interesting. I'm not sure what his religious basis is, but he's quite a wordsmith.
He is. I definitely got sucked into the world of some of these songs. I mean, you know, some of them are more kind of straight ahead this is the way that I live my life type songs, you know, I made it, which is obviously kind of looking back at his success, or, you know, maybe his perceived success, and then Not Anymore, which is an old song, so we won't talk about that. But yeah, like Stay True to Your Heart is another one that's quite straightforward. But then, yeah, like the songs like No One to Know and Babylon and Everybody Sins that are, you know, you're kind of, it's a bit esoteric, and I like that.
But I think the reason I like Not Anymore even more now, it just feels a lot more well-earned and realized and triumphant, because that came out in 2011, 2013.
Right.
When I guess it was a... I don't even know if it was if the EP was on any streaming service at all. It was just kind of a throwaway thing.
Right.
And this time around, it doesn't seem like a throwaway thing. It seems like kind of it's a celebratory end to this.
It's the closer, yeah. It's a really good closer. I actually sent that song to my dad.
Oh my gosh.
Really odd. I was like, I can't get enough of this.
Oh my god.
So I don't know how he's... Yeah, there is kind of a halftime... It's not quite double kick drum, but it's kind of a pretty heavy part in the middle of that song that I think he might find a bit too much. But I think overall it's a pretty straight ahead kind of song. I don't know. Maybe not.
But hey, I'm astounded you love this, to be honest.
I knew that you'd be a bit surprised, but first impressions were kind of...
I'm always like, he loves Dream Theater. He can stretch far with the corn dog.
He just kind of gets it, you know? And I really genuinely have not been... I don't even like I Get Wet all that much, I'll be honest. Like, this just... Whatever this is working for me a lot. I think this is really good. So
Best album since that from a song to song basis.
Yeah,
as opposed to a pick and choose.
Yeah, everything hits. I have to give kind of a special shout out. I mean, you know, I think Andrew WK co-produced it, but you know, for a producer that I've never heard of, he seems to only really have worked with a kind of a slate of underground artists, Andrew WK, and then I think he produced the Gaslight Anthem, which makes sense for some of this stuff. Like, there's definitely kind of a blue-collar stadium rock type vibe to this, but Ted Young deserves a lot of credit, because this album, even though it sometimes strains at the seams on a couple of tracks where it's like everything is kind of pushed maybe a little bit too far to the max, I think overall the production of this album is amazing.
It's interesting. It sounds amazing. I don't think it sounds as good as I Get Wet.
I can't think of how these songs really could have been
very good production
better. Yeah, I Get Wet is
but it's good for what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think this album could have been really produced much better. I would have taken it a little bit easier on the limiters, but that might not even be Ted Young's fault, you know. So
I think the gating's all right. I mean, the guitar tone at points sounds a bit... could be a bit more... you could add a bit more to it, layering wise with the guitar.
Yeah.
Sounds a bit like a single guitar with one distortion tone at points.
Okay.
You know, if I was to do it, I would maybe add a small sub layer of the guitar playing the same thing, but add a different distortion point, maybe a brightness filter or something. I like it.
I really have... I mean, I think this is a really good production job. So that's just me throwing my two cents in the ring there. But
hell yeah.
Yeah, it's a great... yeah, it's a really good effort, I think, from Andrew WK.
I'm giving this a 9, by the way.
Me too. I'll give this a 9.
Wow, there we go. what the fuck?
Yeah, what a world. I really like this. I don't think it's the last time we'll be talking about it.
No.
What's fair track?
It's so much, dude. There's so much to choose. But I think Stay True to Your Heart is the biggest surprise for me.
Yeah, I'm leaning quite close to that. Insane. A verse
with no guitar on an Andrew WK album? Holy shit.
I know. It's a bizarre thing. I think I'll give it to Everybody Sins.
Yeah. No, that chorus is amazing.
Yeah. Ah, oh, God.
Like, not the pre-chorus, but the actual chorus part.
No, it's awesome. Yeah, the second draft pick, maybe Babylon. I think that last kind of the scream into the final, section, I would actually, I think I would end somebody's life in a pit if that ever happens again. So good, so good. All right, that's God is Partying by Andrew WK. Definitely check that out. All right, Dylan, I sort of strong-armed the first review of the show, so what would you like to do next?
What would I like to do next? Jeez. Let's try Common.
Common.
Let's
all go right, for Common.
Straight for him.
Formerly the artist, formerly known as Common Sense, now known as Common, and or to his mother, Lonnie Rashid Lynn, Chicago-based rapper, and actually released his debut album in 1992. So he has been on the scene for a very, very long time, and A Beautiful Revolution Part 2, depending on whether or not you take A Beautiful Revolution as one album or two, is either his 14th or 13th record. So I think this one really, I kind of saw Common's name in the list of albums that were kind of, you know, kind of out in the last couple of weeks, and I knew the name. I knew Common, as many people may have been introduced to him. He performed for Obama during his presidency, and that was that was kind of considered a huge thing for the hip hop community and stuff. And I was, you know, conscious that I actually really was not that familiar at all with Common's music. I don't think I'd ever really listened to him, so I sort of said, okay, well, you know, this might be a good opportunity to dive in and part two of a two part album. Have you had a chance to listen to A Beautiful Revolution Part One?
No, I just noticed it this morning that it came out quite recently as well. Yeah. So basically the same package.
I think
I will get to that.
Yeah. I think from what I understand, this is I have listened to it like once. But from what I understand, this is kind of the slightly the better half. But you know, I just wanted to kind of give a little bit of a what would you say? Kind of a comparison point or flip side of the coin, because we'll be talking about obviously kind of more of an old school hip hop record later on. But regardless, this album I think definitely takes a more organic live approach to the music. Would you agree?
Yes, I would. I would definitely. It sounds almost like a whole live in one take kind of thing at points. It's very impressive off the bat, dude. I love the featured artists in this. I love just the mix. Yeah. It sounds like throw around, but it just sounds like a block party of this style, right?
Mm. Yeah, it definitely sounds like musicians just jamming. You know, there's quite a consistent feel. This is not, you know, while there are samples on display throughout the record, they take a back seat. This is more so about, you know, real drums, you know, real guitar, real bass. Yeah. It's got a very sort of,
it sounds like a jam
soul inspired, funk inspired, or R&B inspired.
Before, right?
It does. And actually, Common kind of teams up with a PJ, who's a kind of an R&B singer, for a lot of the tracks on the record. I mean, she features on,
That's a hit surprise.
Some amazing stuff. Actually, some of her moments are really kind of some of the highlights. Actually, I think just like right off the bat, I think maybe possibly a slight criticism of the record would be that I think maybe a few too many of the highlights go to the guests rather than Common himself. I think like particularly towards the second half of the album, there's lots to call out in terms of just fantastically written verses and stuff, but especially that like that kind of first half of the record, I would sort of be more tuned into, you know, the like the drums or what the singer is doing or like the vibe of the track rather than necessarily Common's verses. I don't know how you feel about his flow and his style.
I quite enjoy it. I could get lost in it, to be honest, for days. And you really get that with like When We Move, Set It Free, for example. You just go with it because what the riffs are kind of just kind of loop, or the bass lines in particular are kind of looping.
Yeah,
and it just sounds, you get caught in the groove. They're very danceable this time, especially with like Majesty, right?
Yeah, Majesty.
Fuck.
Is, yeah, so Majesty good. Is awesome. Because it's got that slap bass kind of going on. Honestly, Majesty was one where I did feel like Common's contribution fell a little flat, but I think the PJ vocal in that track is really good. It actually reminded me of something that, like, Dua Lipa would do or something. It's very much a pop vocal,
yeah,
on that track. And, and the bass, great.
Yeah, the bass guitar slapping with the snare.
So good.
The snare was kind of this tin can that adds to the bounce of the pop with this bass. It's just really simple, but it, like, the song is kind of long and I could listen to it for ages.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I think you called out two really great tracks as well in When We Move and Set It Free. I think When We Move, it's obviously got a real Afrobeat kind of feel to it. And Shun Kuti, who's the youngest son, yep, of Fela Kuti, famous Nigerian musician. And actually, if you watched McCartney 3-2-1, you know, Wings recorded Band on the Run in Nigeria. And he said that, you know, his highlight of that whole recording session was getting to see Fela Kuti live. And he just, like, had a transcendent experience watching that musician. And so you can definitely feel, you know, that kind of, in the same way that with Damian Marley, you can kind of feel Bob Marley's spirit. I think you can kind of feel Fela Kuti's spirit in Shun. And that's a great track. So. Yeah. I love that line. I really love the spirit of that song, which is just, like, you know, regardless of how the world feels about it, like, you know, black culture sets the culture for everybody. So it's this, like, idea of when we got free, the world moved with us, and it kind of takes black culture from slavery all the way through to the modern day, and talking about how, you know, trends have been set, and basically, you know, nearly everything kind of begins with the black community.
We're the reason.
Yeah, it's true.
So don't pretend we're not.
Yeah, yeah. And no, and it's a fantastic song. I think Set It Free kind of continues that and I think on that track, Common's verse is awesome, because it actually, it's rhythmically really interesting, and it kind of sits slightly behind the beat, which is, makes it...
It does. It does.
You can't kind of not look away, but you can't listen away from it. It's so good. Yeah, that's awesome. I think... Then, you know, as I say, there's more great guest spots. Marcus King gives a really cool guitar guest on Poetry.
Yeah, some weird kind of jingles with the weird spookiness with the guitar riffing there. I like it a lot.
Yeah,
Sounds very, very old school R&B.
Kind of I was looking at that kind of going, Marcus King, any relation to BB? Not at all. But very much like that crusty old school blues type feel, I think, to that, the guitar playing in that song, which is really good. Just a couple of lines that I think that have sort of jumped out to me. I think there's a few really strong verses, like on Star of the Gang, which I presume is a reference to Gangstar. There's a line, halfway across the bridge, I saw a couple of kids who yell black lives, but ain't know where blacks live, which is very much like, it's great to hear a rapper from, you know, from the early 90s, basically like bringing that political commentary right up to date. And I read a slightly longer excerpt from, I think, I'm gonna get it wrong. What song this is from? I think it's from Poetry, possibly. But this is just a fantastic verse from Common. I combine strength, poetic liberation in a nation that asked me for identification. I'm a Haitian. I'm Jamaican. I'm forsaken. I'm mistaken identity. I'm Medgar Evers' memory. In my father's good and bad tendencies, I'm a man that loved music but don't love the industry. Don't like when fake folk grin at me. I love Public Enemy. I love the messages my love be sending me. Chicago Chase. So I love being finicky. Calling him cuzzo even though he ain't kin to me. Love drinking wine while my homie drink Hennessy. I love poetry when it becomes infinity. That's a brilliant.
Yeah, that brilliant that got me dizzy. I was clapping by the end of that, to be honest.
Yeah, that was really impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. And like later on you get some beautiful comebacks from PJ with Imagine.
Which
is kind of this Childish Gambino-esque thing. Kind of summertime R&B.
That's
stuff.
A great shout, actually.
Delicious.
That's one of the more sort of heavily sampled. That's a song called Imaginary Playmates by Rene and Angela from the 70s, early 80s.
It's well done.
Yeah, I thought it was Simply Red, actually. That's why I looked it up, but it's not. But it's an awesome. It's a great. I love that. I've been dreaming of a paradise. It's a great hook, and I think it's a rare kind of optimistic hip hop song. You know, like often it's kind of a stark, a surveying of like current times. But actually, that song is very much like what could be, which is
nice. There's a lot of that, dude. There's a lot of that. You have to get to like Odyssey has tons of it.
Yeah, that's true.
Childish Gambino had tons of it in the new album.
Yeah.
A lot of, it's a dreamer's language, R&B nowadays, depending on where you're picking. Get It Right sounds a lot like Chromeo.
Yeah, a little bit, right? I can hear it
especially in the music.
Yeah, that's that one's got a shout out. There's a couple of great shout outs on this, and I'm sure I've missed loads of them, but that one has that line, "The Lovely Days, The Midnight Marauders," which is obviously a Tribe Called Quest reference, and then I think earlier on he talks about life's a bitch, so I hope she doesn't kill my vibe, and obviously that's a Nas Illmatic reference tying together
it's the two albums
that we're reviewing today. But yeah, I think Get It Right is great. There's actually loads of guests on this record that are from groups that I've always been meaning to check out and haven't. Like, for example, Raphael Sadiq from that song, Get It Right, is the singer from Tony, who I've heard of and never checked out. And then,
as you should get straight on that.
Yeah, are you familiar with them? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I will. This is the
well worth it.
The impetus that's going to finally get me to listen to them. And Brittany Howard sings on Saving Grace, and she's from Alabama Shakes, who again I've heard the name but never checked them out. So, and actually, When We Move has a verse from Black Thought, who's from The Roots, and again The Roots, super highly acclaimed group that I've never checked out. So I need to. I have a lot of homework to do after listening to this album.
Yeah, set on a playlist with this kind of stuff, and you'll be surprised.
Yeah, the guest spots. It's great though. I think overall, I find the music just a touch kind of lightweight. I like when on like Sorry the Gang, for example, it goes for more of a menacing Illmatic style bass line.
It's kind of ominous and weird.
Yeah, I almost like when it's a bit pacier. Like Get It Right is a bit more pace, and the laid back stuff is good, but
there's a lot of it but it adds variety to everything, because you get your stuff like Imagine, and then you have everything else like Seven Grace. It's just different.
It definitely doesn't I'd say it's welcome. I wonder whether listening through the sort of combined album, which runs at a total of like an hour and 12 minutes, I think that might start to wear you down, but as a sort of a single,
we'll have to think back on that.
It's like a quick kind of 40 minutes. I don't love it all, but I like a lot of it. I think they'll be kind of picking and choosing to be done from this album, but I think what's strong on here is really strong, and Common is a really cool voice. It's like a very smooth, deep, very clear kind of flow.
It's concise.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually pay attention to everything he's saying in a long flow, which is not usual.
you don't kind of like phase out of what he's saying. It's just it's very easy to follow, and I think he's I think he's really good. I had a little listen back. Yeah. He definitely had a very different style. I had a little listen back to his first album, Can I Borrow a Dollar? And he has much more of a kind of a, I don't know what you'd call it, like a stylized, almost sort of E40 style, like kind of stop start type flow. Whereas it's a really smooth lyrical
kind feels of flow very timely.
It doesn't feel dated to me. I think this feels very much of the moment.
It's good. I haven't said much about it elaborating on it, but it's a grower, man. It's gonna linger with me for a long, long while, as most of this music is, because I have to catch up on a lot of his albums since I knew the very first one Borrow a Dollar. But the rest I just haven't really tackled, and I'm excited to get under this.
Yeah, one thing that I've been watching, I know it's been out for a couple of years, but I've been really enjoying Hip Hop Evolution. I don't know if they've done an episode on Chicago. I know they've done, you know, they've done kind of Houston, New Orleans, and Atlanta. So
I'd like to check it out.
I have a couple of. If you haven't seen Hip Hop Evolution, my friend, it's one of the best music documentaries I've ever seen. It's amazing. It's Netflix, is it? Netflix, yeah. It's the rapper, okay. Shad, who's a good rapper in his own right. Just interviewing, you know, almost every single sort of person who's still alive, and from hip hop. I mean, there's literally like three people who he doesn't get for an interview, and just tells the story, you know, all the way back to the early 70s, right through. I think I'm kind of got three episodes left. It's four seasons. I've got three episodes left. I think he's right up to kind of early 2000s now. But yeah, he kind of goes to regional scenes, and he does the East Coast, West Coast, and it's fascinating. And I've gotten to know so many artists and albums that I hadn't dipped into before.
Yeah, that's awesome. What does that remind me of recently? Shirley Manson's podcast, she did The Jump. Focuses on songs that certain artists pick.
Yeah.
And kind of they get to explain why that song is why it is.
Yeah.
like Bootsy Collins, Run the Jewels, Patti Smith. Nice. She does a lot of R&B stuff as well, which is cool.
Yeah.
So much history.
It's always great to get a bit more of the context around this kind of stuff. And you know, there's a whole episode about Illmatic, actually. So, you know, some of that will come into our review later. But yeah, no, it's you can definitely hear the lineage, and it's always cool because I think hip hop is one genre where people pay their dues and they kind of pay respects. And you can hear on this album. I mean, you know, like I say, we're definitely picking up on probably only about, you know, 10% of the references that are all throughout this album, and you can hear him kind of paying his dues to those that came before him, and maybe were contemporaries as well back in the 90s and you know, back into the 80s. So it's really cool that way. It feels like there's a whole sort of hip hop cinematic universe, I guess. Once you start to get to know it, it all sort of starts to make sense. And
there are the hip hop Avengers for sure.
Yes, I wouldn't claim to be an expert or anything like that, but I thoroughly enjoyed this as a sort of a modern day example of, you know, authentic kind of hip hop that kind of has its roots in the underground. I thought this is really good.
And it does have its roots in the historical stuff as well. And the artwork is incredible, by the way. I love the artwork all the way through this.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a really strong great concept. With shades. Yeah, it's awesome. It's really good. Yeah, it's kind of bright, sort of bright primary colors, and very much kind of posterized figures. Holding musical instruments in an almost sort of revolutionary style,
like skin tones. Yeah, it's very statuesque.
Yes. That's right. So I think my favorite track is probably on this is probably Imagine.
Oh, Imagine's incredible. Yeah, obviously. It always is. Let's see. I would say, I think it's Majesty for me, man.
Oh, yeah. Good shout.
Yeah.
Yeah, good shout. I'm going to give this a 7.
I'd be with an 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is really good. I mean, if we gave 0.5s, it'd probably be a 7.5 for me, but it's 7 because we don't do that. It's really good. It is really good. And I think the general consensus seems to be that it's a little bit better than part 1, but you know, one of his better latter day albums, and delighted to have been able to get to know it well. So that's A Beautiful Revolution Part 2 by Common, and that leads us into there's no debate about this. It is the last new release of the week. And it's the name of the artist is Eagle Eyed Tiger. And the name of the album is Untether Unravel. Another
it's a great artist name, by the way.
Yeah, well, is it? I can't decide if it's brilliant or terrible.
It's fine.
Yeah,
reminds you of Three Trap Tigers. It's good.
So what's it supposed to remind you of? I mean, maybe Three Trap Tigers, certainly Eagle Eye Cherry. Not that it bears any sonic resemblance, and I presume the main inspiration is, you know, is kind of eighties iconography and Rocky, you know, Rocky III. You know, Eye the Tiger, Eagle Eye makes sense. It's a little cheese ball, but I can get on board. And the album artwork for this one, I mean, it's been a week of really strong album artwork, I think, because again, I want to shout out the album artwork here. It's phenomenal, right? It's kind of a man standing in a green speed vortex.
Yeah, it's a time delay photos. Yeah, but serious.
Seriously, I really like it. So how did I come across? This you may ask, because I was not at all familiar with. I was not at all familiar with this artist before, but I got an email. I get these emails from Bandcamp every now and again. I get them once a week, and when I'm trying to sort of find new music to listen to, and this just came in my dose of albums that you might like, and I think somebody had reviewed it saying it was the best synthwave album they'd ever heard, and I sort of thought, well, if it's somebody's best ever, then it's probably worth a listen, and I popped on the track Fly Me to the Groove, and based on that song and that song alone, which I see is the most played by some distance on the record, I sort of said, well, this is good enough, I think, for the album to be the album cannot be cannot be so much worse than this track that it wouldn't be worth reviewing. So I'm glad to report that I think the whole album, while it doesn't retain the vibe of Fly Me to the Groove, I still think it definitely maintains a certain degree of quality that makes this reviewing and listening to, right?
It's typically as bitty as vaporwave albums go.
Oh, would you put this in a vaporwave type genre?
It has bits, yeah. Mm. Of course, it has a lo-fi bits that kind of come off synthwave.
Yeah.
Especially with like some of the later stuff. Mm. Variation of the harmonic sequence. Even Fly Me to the Groove, bar like the pounding synths that come in.
Fly Me to the Groove, that's a thing. I mean, I think that song slaps you around the chops in a way that not much in the sort of outrun synthwave genre does. I mean, that definitely speaks to me more like Uppermost or even Nero. I mean, it's got that dung dung bump bump, but it's really like you can hear you can hear the
sounds like a good like poly bass synth arpeggio. It's great.
The bass
really kind
of bounces off the leads, and that's I absolutely love that song, I have to say. But I think harmonic sequence. I hear what you mean, and
the leads get very lo-fi and swirly, and that's where it gets very vaporwave for me.
The lo-fi bits remind me actually a lot of Hello Meteor that we covered a few weeks back.
Home, I would say.
Home for sure.
Reflections of Home.
Yes. What's the track? Descend towards the end, I think, starts like Home, but then it kind of ends with an 80s guitar solo and some pianos that reminded me of Junk era M83, which is no bad thing.
Oh yeah. There's parts in this which sound kind of off the beaten track from what he's trying to establish, like Race for the Escape Pod. Sounds a little odd, but good.
That's
an outlier.
That's needling right into my cerebellum or my amygdala for that 2012 Monster Cat era, got that. It's sort of dubstep adjacent, but
a little tossed into what's kind of being established in the previous songs up to that point.
Yeah.
And it's short. It's pretty short.
It's so very short. It's like a minute or something. I think that's. I actually really like that song, I have to say. But or interlude or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Ending Things. Also, has a huge amount of. Variety to it. I think it sort of reminds me of early Glitch Mob. It's got this really brash, bossy, whatever you want to call it, like short attack bass. Like it's very much a kind of a in your face bass, synth bass tone, which is awesome. But then it's also got this sort of delicate music box line on top against this very hard beat that I think is
I appreciated that. A good contrast for sure. Gave it layers.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Exactly.
There's a sense of scope to this kind of synth wave, which I really do appreciate.
That's the thing. I think this transcends just being... Because I think certain genres can be... what do you want to call them? Like derivative or whatever, but...
Yeah, there's like, oh, this synth wave sounds incredibly 80s. Yeah. Like, all the way through, but this doesn't really.
No, I think this almost just qualifies as... electronic, sort of electronic music more so than a synthwave album. Whereas I feel like synthwave, and if you actually listen back to his earlier releases, he's quite an eclectic artist and doesn't stick to any one sound. So I wouldn't necessarily say that Eli Tiger is a synthwave artist, more just an electronic artist that has sort of some dappling in the synthwave genre. But yeah, it's not all good. I do think that I agree. Like there are moments. I think Variations on a Harmonic Sequence definitely goes on a bit long, and it kind of has this
yes
bass solo that I could really do without. Power Out, I think that "Can you tell me use the power out" is not quite as great as maybe
as
he thinks
as much
is.
As we love the vocoders, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't know if it works here.
Yeah. Yeah. It works. I think it works on Cosmic Comedian quite beautifully, but I don't think it works on Power Out. Yeah.
Ish. I think Cosmic Comedian is quite like, it doesn't establish what you're going to be hearing. That's the only flaw it has being the intro song.
Yeah, I think it kind of sweeps you up. I don't mind when an intro song doesn't give an accurate indication of what's to follow, because it just all it needs to do is sort of take your hand and guide you down a path, and I think it does that really well. I really like Cosmic Comedian, but I usually
like vocoders more when it's with groovy music.
Yeah,
like of course Chromeo or what have you.
Absolutely.
But not here. Not really here, to be honest.
But a bit. Surely the last track works for you, though, right? That's a great track, Untether, Unravel.
Oh, yeah, it's all right. It's all right. Yeah, same kind of quabbles as the first song.
It's not really vocoder, though. It's just. I mean, that to me more sounds like a sort of a processed vocal rather than a vocoder. But I think it's
just me. Like, vocals take me out of the vaporwave thing. You know, it's just how my mind is set.
Yeah.
Slightly takes me out of it. I lose my concentration a bit. I don't know. It was just a little jarring for my taste.
Yeah. I think having that the epic ballad at the end of the album works.
It is
well.
Good though. It is. That part still retains.
Yeah. And it's definitely the only song on the album you could liken to more sort of like indie electro or electro pop. I think that song has bits of, you know, Joywave or Cook Copy or Passion Pit. Joywave, I mean, it's more of a it's more of an electro pop track that I think. Whereas the rest of the album, you would say it's more, you know, whether it's sort of EDM or chillwave or synthwave or even kind of electro house or whatever. There's bits and bobs of all that stuff, but that last track is definitely kind of more of a sort of a pop song, which I like. But yeah, I can tell. Okay, so yeah. It's not a knockout punch for me, but I think it's really strong and an artist that I will want to keep an eye on. I don't think the whole album lives up to the promise of Fly Me to the Groove.
No, but very strong main songs.
Yes,
for sure.
Yeah. It's
like
you're right.
Calibre with Home and stuff like that for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it's an album of highlights. But I think those highlights are really enjoyable, and I think this is one that I'm going to go back to, because it has a mood that it creates, and that sometimes this might be the only thing that, you know, that's going to hit the spot for you. So
it's well needed comfort food for this genre, which we haven't had much of this year. But
no, I'm trying to keep it fresh. And I know we had Hello Meteor, but that was a much more ambient type journey than this. Yeah. It didn't have any of those.
I mean, I'm sure SoundCloud is full of it, Bandcamp are full of these artists, but
it's hard to. Sometimes it's hard to even use SoundCloud anymore. They are so aggressive with their advertising for SoundCloud Premium, but that's another story. I'm gonna obviously take, sorry, but I'm taking it. I think Fly Me to the Groove is the best track, and I'm gonna give this a 7.
Great.
This is actually a strong 7.
Yeah, I'm choosing the same song because fuck it.
Yeah,
fuck
the
rules.
It's the best one. Yep.
I'm giving this a 7.
Alright, great. Cool. Alright, good stuff. So that is Untether Unravel by Eagle Eyed Tiger. Well worth a listen, and just, you know, It's a good night. It's a night drive type album. It's a night walk type album. So if you find yourself, you know, in these shortening days, looking for some atmospheric soundtracks to your evening walks, this is the one, I think, for this week.
While we're preparing for the the Kavinsky apocalypse coming on later this year. Oh my God.
We were promised September, Dylan. Kinetic punchline. Oh. Not to continue the review, but there's a line that surely is so Kavinsky that it must just be an homage to Kavinsky on that record. But yeah, we were promised Kavinsky in September, and I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, we've another sort of 2 weeks left in September, so I guess it could still happen. But there's been no talk of a release date or anything.
I'm up for stealth drops.
Oh yeah, I'm up for stealth drops, but I mean. The man has been very cagey. He's just his new album coming soon, but like when the hell? Like he hasn't tweeted since September 5th, and it was not a tweet that had anything to do with his new album.
Would you rather him be a Kanye West stopping and starting it?
Yes.
I wouldn't.
I would. Yeah, so obviously all of these artists are just filling the hole in our hearts that was left by Kavinsky when he hadn't made another single piece of music since 2012?
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah.
Yeah.
2010. Oh, gee, you're kidding me. No, 2013. Yeah, we all love Kavinsky, though. All right, so moving on. It is with great pleasure that I reintroduce Time Machine for 1 week and 1 week only. No, hopefully we'll bring it back on an enduring basis, but you know, it just depends.
I can't believe it.
But we certainly are back with Time Machine this week, and for a very special record. We are talking about Illmatic, the 1994 debut album from Nazir Bin Alu Dara Jones, aka Nas, who, in case he hadn't told you enough, is from Queensbridge in New York.
Yeah. I was 1 year old when this came out.
I was two.
Great. Yeah, I was literally, yeah, 3 days after my birthday, so yeah.
Nice. Oh, nice. Yeah. Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of fun. Yeah, according to Nas, he had been rapping since 1983, so I understand he was 20 when Illmatic came out, so that means that I guess he was 9 when he was rapping in the park. I'm trying to find out what the
it's a start
what the actual verse is, but it's a great verse that he raps about. He says, back in 83 I was an MC sparking, but I was too scared to grab the mics in the park and kick my little raps because I thought N-words wouldn't understand. Now in every jam I'm the fucking man. That's a long way to go in 11 years, but he did it. And so this is Illmatic. It's kind of widely regarded as one. You probably already know it, dear listener.
Sort of.
I actually want to know about whether or not you were familiar with this, but just a little bit of background on the album. It's kind of widely considered one of the greatest hip hop records of all time. It was kind of considered to have a bit of a revival of the New York scene. So, you know, New York, obviously hip-hop was the birthplace of hip-hop back in kind of 72 73, and then the first hip-hop albums and records and singles started coming out around the end of the 70s and then into the 80s, and you had kind of Run DMC and Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five and all these kind of artists that, you know, New York artists throughout the 80s that that kind of, you know, established hip hop as a you know, a hugely popular medium. And then, you know, then towards the end of the 80s, the West Coast scene became, you know, the more dominant scene with NWA and Dre and the Chronic and all sorts of stuff. And that led into what was kind of seen as a moment of rebirth that was needed for New York. And and basically, like, New York hip hop was no longer the main vein. As far as from a commercial standpoint for hip hop, and there was a huge community of crate digging, and record fairs, and basically producers almost battling with each other to find the most obscure, the most out of left field samples from, you know, from old soul records and jazz records and God knows what, you know, there's like classical records and things. And that's where the producers of Illmatic, DJ Premier, Large Professor, LES, Pete Rock and Q-Tip come in, because Nas had been sort of tipped after based on one verse. I don't know if you noticed, but there's a verse playing in the background of Genesis, the first track, right? At the very start, yes. You can hear Nas rapping in the background. That's his verse from a Main Source live album, Live at the Barbecue, and that was basically the reason Nas was signed was that verse, and it's an amazing
verse. That's a nice touch.
Yeah, it's a really nice touch. Actually, it cuts off the line that kind of propelled him was this: when I was 12, I went to hell for snuffing Jesus, and it's just cut off right before the album sort of kicks in proper. But yeah, so he's, you know, he was young. He was only kind of 19, 20 when this was recorded. He was working with, obviously, Q-Tip from Tribe Called Quest, but also these other, like, really highly respected and very forward-thinking producers, and wanted to revive the New York scene by painting a picture of kind of life in Queens and New York in the kind of early to mid-90s. And he just comes out all guns blazing right from that first bass line, that piano line in New York State of Mind. You're like, wow, right?
Yeah, that sub hum. It's gorgeous. It's breezy, that chill breeze of New York near the subway on winter's day. Yeah, it's ooh. I totally get it. Yeah. I totally get it.
Had you ever listened to Illmatic before we brought it in?
I never listened to it in full. Okay. I always listened to the some of the main songs in it. But yeah, this is my first time tackling it in full. Right. That's how I usually am with. With a lot of rap artists, I kind of just pick and choose what songs hit me, but this is the first time I went all the way back, and my God, I love it. I love it. Good. It's such a time capsule.
It is. It's a time capsule. And yeah, the thing about it is, as well, is like, I kind of, like, I'm generally the same myself. You know, I think with the exception, obviously, we've covered Tribe Called Quest on the show before, and
That was more my realm, but yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And but I think there are certain hip-hop artists where the album is the art form, and then I think there are others where it's really more about the track, and you know, you do see in the genre there's a lot of albums that are sort of, you know, an hour plus and loaded with filler. This is not one of those albums. This has clearly been crafted with the idea of an LP. It's 30 something odd minutes. It is just so tightly constructed.
Yeah, it's heartfelt, it's nostalgic. Even though it's his debut, it's very mature.
Yeah.
If not a little weird for its time, you know, I'll let some things slide.
Okay, we'll hit that right up. Yeah, there's a couple of moments with respect, like, particularly to, there's a line in New York City of Mind, and then there's a couple of lines in Halftime, which unfortunately is one of the best tracks on the album for my money.
It's
just those, those horns are amazing. He and like this great lines in there, like, I wear chains that excite the feds and all this. It's just so good. But there
feels
are a couple
De La Soul-ish
and similar era too. But yeah, there's some sort of questionable gay slurs, which I'm sure would have been well in the lexicon at the time. And to be fair to Nas, you know, I've watched videos of him in, you know, the last kind of 10 years performing. I don't think it's a song he performs live all that much, but when he performs it, that line becomes, he just takes out the parts that rhyme and leaves out the, you know, he leaves out those lyrics. So he just,
that's good.
He just says, I'm versatile. I'm an intellectual. That's not in question, yo, or whatever. He just takes out there. So, you know, so he's aware himself that those lines
good sense
not,
of change.
Yeah, they've not aged well.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's guilty of it.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, you know, for better or worse, like, it does kind of probably represent the, you know, it's a no holds barred, everything on the table representation of, you know, a young person kind of living in a quite a dangerous city, you know, at that time, and basically doing what they can to cope, be that
danger,
you know,
there's confronting depression and stuff with life's a bitch.
Yep.
I love that.
There's a huge amount of kind of weed and alcohol as an escape as well. I mean, throughout the album, I think he even acknowledges that on, I think there's a great, sort of 20th anniversary. I will not say the remaster of this album is absolute garbage. Do not listen to it. It actually, the production on the remaster, it just didn't. It was like trying to fix perfection. That the 90s original master is just perfect. So the remaster,
which one's the remaster?
XXX. Yep. But there's a brilliant live at the Kennedy Center, which is just sort of an orchestral reimagining of this album, and he sort of says, "Oh man, like I don't need weed to enjoy this or something," because so many of the lyrics of the album are kind of a tribute to weed, and he was like, "You guys are getting me high without weed," or something, and that was kind of a funny little reference. Did you know that his dad is actually featured on this record?
No. Yeah, where is he at?
So, you know, so Life's a Bitch, which, by the way, has the Biggie sound before Biggie. Like, I could not believe, I was not familiar with that track, but everything about it, just, like, and the really smooth R&B with the booming bass backbone. I was like, this is just... like Biggie Smalls. his production. It's crazy.
It's got a lot of the sub-wub bass for sure. That's the first thing you notice.
But a couple of years before. So that's, you know, so Nas even kind of sort of pioneered that. I say comfortably a couple of years before, the same year. Sorry, don't get mad at me, hip hop heads. 1994. But, you know, but ultimately that's obviously something that's a sound that was in the ether at the time. But regardless, it's a great track. But Olu Dara, his father, is the trumpet at the end of that beautiful trumpet at the end of Life's a Bitch.
It's a very cool trumpet.
Is his dad, who was a jazz musician. So there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's great. I you know, there's so much in the way of great kind of one-liners, I think, on this album. You know, One Time for Your Mind I'm new on the rap scene. Edward's never heard of me, and yet I'm a menace. Police want to murder me. There's some great rhymes throughout the album. It just kind of flows. Like, the whole thing, you can sit back and just let it kind of wash over you, I think.
Yeah, it's very chill. It's very fun, and you know, it comes out of it very striking, as you say, New York State of Mind off the bat.
Yeah,
he comes out the gates.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though most of this is chill.
That line, I think, you're right. What does he say? He's like, I still write rhymes, but other than that, I'm just chilling. But yeah, there's that line, you know, I never sleep because sleep is the cousin of death. And that's such an amazing line. I really thought that was a quote from something like a movie or a book, but it's not. That's just Nas. I genuinely thought that was from literature, because you know, you hear that line, it just resonates so much. And and he was kind of seen as the new Rakim, or the successor to Rakim from Eric B and Rakim, one of the sort of early pioneers of hip hop. And that the
I can see it.
The New York State of Mind, the kind of hook in that song, is actually a sample of Rakim. So that song is kind of there to signal the new era has arrived. You I think we need to talk about a couple of the samples in this, because there's just some really unusual and just thrilling stuff.
Yeah, what struck out with you?
Well, I mean, particularly, I think I actually don't even know what it is, but you know, on One Love, not a glockenspiel, but like
it's kind of a not a harmonic.
Is it one of those? You know, those
xylophone kind of?
Yeah, it could be. It could be a xylophone.
I think so.
I think it's a no, it's a Mabira. Yeah, I knew that. Okay. It's one of those thumb pianos.
I love those metal things. Yeah, yeah.
It's from a 1975 Heath Brothers song called "Smiling Billy Sweet Part 2. And it's just something you just don't expect to hear in a hip hop song, but it works so well. And then
I can expect it. There is a childlike quality to it, which is interesting.
It's got that kind of, it's like a music box, but with a bit more kind of soul to it, which is awesome. On Represent, which, by the way, has just like the most, it's just got such a great gang vocal, because everybody sounds so just excited to be there, that represent, like I love that. But the sample on Represent is amazing. It sounds like a Russian classical song, right? I have no idea like what it is. According to who sampled, it's something called The Thief of Baghdad by Lee Irwin. So I don't know.
Interesting pick.
What that is, right? But again, they were crate diggers. Enough. They found obscure things and they turned them into amazing examples. And then the last thing that really struck out to me was It Ain't Hard to Tell, which mixes in this kind of hot jazz, song. This kind of screaming hot jazz, and then a sample from Human Nature. It's like a part written by Steve Porcaro, who's actually in Toto.
Yeah.
It's that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's actually written by, yeah, same person that did Africa and Roseanne and stuff. So that's quite interesting. But
I got that vibe. So very warm. It's fun.
Yeah. It was originally recorded by an artist who I refused to name, but that part was written by, as I say, Steve from Toto, and it just works so well. It just ties that whole song together. Sorry, I feel like I've been grandstanding. I'd love to hear a few more of your thoughts.
No, you really take it from me. Like, it's just, it's got a lovely run to it. I love how Chili takes it later on. Mm. Definitely feels, like kind of Biggie Smalls before Biggie was ever a thing.
Yeah.
Which I really found interesting. True. Yeah, and it's interesting to see how he's developed that now. Because I listened to the new stuff and it's taken quite a departure.
What? Here's the thing. Yeah, did you have a little listen to anything off?
Yeah.
King's Disease Part 2. People were sort of saying that was a real return to form, and you know, from a sort of a verse perspective, maybe. But the production just reminded me of the YouTube audio library. Like, it really sounded like royalty free beats.
No, this sounds like The City.
Yeah.
Which is inspired by.
Yeah.
I don't think the new album sounds like it's been inspired by any place in particular.
No.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, it just sounds a bit. Yeah, it's a bit generic. I'd have to get used to it. I know people are talking about Death Row East, and it's all about that kind of East West beef and all this sort of stuff, which is interesting, and it's worth looking into what happened there, but that was more to do with sort of Biggie and Tupac than it was to do with Nas. But you know, there's good stuff in there, and there's actually an amazing Eminem verse on EPMD2. If you check that out, that's a fantastic verse. But I think this just, you're right, this just feels, it just feels like New York, and he never lets you forget. It's he's constantly shouting out Queensbridge and Brooklyn and the South Bronx and Staten Island and all of his friends and the producers of the record, and even on what track is it? It's One Love. He's that song is basically dedicated to a friend of his who's in prison, and he's kind of talking about it sort of runs like a conversation that he's having with this person during visiting.
I love that one. Yeah. I love Q-Tip's feature on that.
It's fantastic. I also think the fact that it sounds so consistent from start to finish, despite the fact that there were five or six producers, is kind of amazing.
Yeah, there's a bit of a struggle with the loudness, but I enjoyed it all the way through.
Yeah. Just out of interest, were you listening to the Illmatic XX version or the original?
It was the original. I beat it just to see what it was like, and
not good. It's just interesting because I had been listening to the original like all week, but that was just kind of on speakers. But I listened to XX on headphones, and I actually found it quite harsh and. Hard to listen to, and I sort of thought, oh no. And then I went and listened today to the 90s version, and it's just like it's perfect. As I say, you can't improve on it. So and these were the best producers in the game, and I'm trying to think of where Tribe Called Quest was in 94. I mean, I think they certainly the Low End Theory would have been out at that point, but Midnight Marauders would have come out the previous year. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was one of the biggest things to happen in the 90s, so that's a hard thing to follow.
Yeah, so they were
with that same vibe, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the influence of Nas is kind of unquestionable, really. From this album, it kind of echoes through the ages all the way through to, lots of modern stuff, Kendrick Lamar.
Like things like Gorillaz.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going outside that genre, yeah.
Yeah.
The running sub bass is there with the first album, at least.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's just such a, I just think there's such a wild sense of creativity to what is deemed acceptable. You know, I think this, I was looking into sort of bounce music, which is a New Orleans, and not to like try and kind of shit on their version of hip hop, but like their hip hop is, the whole genre of bounce music is based on one sample from one song.
Yeah.
And so to compare that with this, where the songs just feel like they're just a tapestry of the, it feels like the logical sort of endpoint of sampling, you know, like this is how you make the weirdest samples that should not go together work perfectly. And also kind of add something to what the artist has to say, you know?
Yeah. Now this is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's timeless, truly.
It is. Yeah. And in a way that, you know, I think the Beastie Boys might have taken it, you know, many steps further in terms of like the sheer density. Like they just went absolutely hog wild with samples. Yeah. But the class with which the samples are, and I think the care with which they're chosen on this record is pretty much unmatched. So yeah, it's good. The only thing is Memory Lane passes me by a bit. That's all I'd say. I don't know about you, but that song kind of just, I think it's fine.
Yeah, no, I get that. The album definitely sounds very young hip hop.
Yeah,
but I enjoy it still.
Yeah,
it's like, got a lot of the flaws,
like you said. It sounds young, but also oddly kind of mature or wise or something. You know, he's kind of braggadocious and boastful and has a, you know, whatever you want to call it, but like a very a huge amount of confidence, but then at the same time there are lines that just feel very world weary and kind of, as I say, like a product of his environment. And yeah, it stands as a time capsule today. It's a perfect album for Time Machine. And it's one of the albums that I'll take away. I've taken away tons and tons of tracks from my kind of journey into the world of hip hop, but this is definitely like a full album that I can just put on any time and just thoroughly enjoy.
Yeah, like this is definitely the beginning of a lot of imagery.
Yeah.
That is so deeply rooted in hip hop. That, you know, you come to expect it nowadays, but this was the first of it, right?
Yeah.
Of that cliche.
Yep. And this just doesn't feel commercial. It just feels like music being made for the sake of just like telling a story, conveying a message, and for the love of it, I suppose. And yeah, I you know, after all of our talk, it did come out several months before Ready to Die by Notorious B.I.G. So we could say Nas did it first, not by a few years, but by a few months, in a couple of cases.
A lot of ideas.
Yeah, a lot of ideas. All right, dude, I could tell you're flagging and you're not well. So I think we'll wrap it up there.
Yeah.
What is your?
Sorry about that.
No, man, it's
hard to. My mind's spaghetti.
It's one love. It's okay. but listen, what is your favorite track?
Oh. Let me think. Probably last song.
In Hard to Tell. It's such a good song. Just because it's iconic. Just because of how iconic it is and how much of a sort of a rocket ship it just lights a firework on the album. It's New York State of Mind.
Yes.
Awesome track. All right. That's Illmatic by Nas from 1994. You've obviously already heard it, but on the very off chance that you haven't, go check it out. And don't listen to the 2000 and whatever 14 version. Listen to the 1994 version.
Of course, yeah. Like, if you want to listen to an album that sounds like the haunted subways of New York, yeah, this is the one.
I can see it. I can hear it. I love it. Mm-hmm. His career after that... good points, bad points, but there's absolutely no question with this. This is amazing. And I will say as well, my first encounter with Nas I have to say this because I'm sure there's a whole generation of yeah. white guys whose first and maybe for a long time only encounter with Nas was on the track "Play Me" by Korn off their 2003 album "Take a Look in the Mirror," which
you're right.
despite another unfortunate sort of line around you know the LGBT community is a phenomenal verse, two phenomenal verses. And yeah, and also just a fucking great track. So "Play Me" by Korn and Nas is a pretty good introduction to him as a rapper. Mm. But anyways, that's all we got time for this week, folks. So we're going to let Dylan pop a lem sip and get into bed.
Yeah, pop a pill. I'll be alright.
Yep. What does Nas has a line about Motrin somewhere in the album, which is a Nurofen for those of you in Europe, yeah. But I can't remember what the exact line is. But either way, if you want to hear more from us, we've got a backlog of over 100 episodes you can dip into.
Holy shit.
You can find us anywhere you look under Kill Shuffle. So do say hello if you'd like to. But that is where we will leave it for this week, and we will speak to you in a fortnight.
Yes, next time we have Don Brocco.
Yes, we do. And more besides. But yes, Don Brocco is finally out. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I'm very excited. And yeah, got a new Thrice album. Might talk about that, but we will leave that all up to chance. So speak to you soon, everybody.
Toodles.
Bye.